Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. You are the first case the afternoon panel will hear in the new term, so you have a special place in this year. The panel this afternoon is to my right, Justice Sue Walker. To my left, Justice Lee Gabriel. I'm Leanne Dofino. We did have three cases set for oral submission, I think, but one has been postponed. So we will hear two cases this afternoon on oral submission, and the rest will be submitted on briefs. And I understand both sides are ready. So if you'll call the case, we'll get started. All right, thank you. You ready?
Have a seat.
Please.
It's an honor to be before this court for the first time. Scotty McLean for the appellant. We have a summary judgment case here. This is a course and scope case, respondeat superior. Judge Davis, visiting for Judge Wilkinson, granted summary judgment. The appellants are here asking this court to reverse the summary judgment that was granted in favor of Evergreen Presbyterian Ministries. Frankly, I don't think there's much dispute on the law. In this particular case, it's how does our factual scenario fit within the law? Essentially, what the appellees argue is this is a commuting case or a deviation case. We think it is not a commuting case. We agree with the statement of the law from the appellee, as well as in our brief, that someone going to and from work is not within the course and scope of employment. We're not arguing that issue. What we have here from a factual standpoint is not that situation. Factually, in this case, Ms. Wilson, who was an employee for Evergreen, she received a call at 11 o'clock that morning. She was a caregiver for adults at special needs homes. That's the business of Evergreen Presbyterian Ministries. She receives a call at 11 o'clock and says, you need to be at the Endicott House. This defendant, appellee, has multiple homes within the Metroplex. She receives that call, goes on about her business that day. As it gets closer to her time to start work, which was 3 o'clock, she goes through her mind and says, well, I'm not exactly sure where I need to be. The record indicates then that she left her house. She went to her principal place of business, which is the Echo Summit House in Arlington. She went there for one reason. The appellees want to say it was a personal reason, but we believe the summary judgment evidence and the evidence before this court shows it was a business reason. And that business reason was to check her schedule to see where she was supposed to be. She checked her schedule. She then left her primary place of employment, where she worked 90% of the time. She then went en route to the Endicott House. There was a small deviation to Albertson's to buy pretzels, which she does. She immediately gets back in her vehicle. She then is traveling, getting on the access road of I-20, when she strikes and kills a 15-year-old pedestrian. My clients, obviously, are the parents of Cody Rock and Montes, who died in this case. So the issue before this court, I don't think has been raised in any Texas opinion that I can find or any opinion that I've seen in the appellee's brief. The question is, did that stop? Did that stop at the principal place of business? Did that rend her in the course and scope, or at the very least raise a fact question that a jury should be able to decide? Certainly, we think in this particular case, a jury should be able to decide that.
But there's also the commuting issue.
Well, I think the commuting cases that they've cited, that we've looked at, are actually commuting cases to and from actual work. Now, the analogy I would give you, at my law office, I have a wonderful legal assistant. If she's at home and she thinks, oh, goodness, Scotty wanted me to do something Monday, I can't remember what it is. She goes to the office. En route to my office, she's clearly not in course and scope. But once she gets there and she looks at that calendar and it says, oh, yeah, Medical authorization needs to be signed by Ms. Johnson. Go to her home. Once she looks at that directive, that calendar, and then departs my office to go to work, she's in course and scope. So respectfully, Judge Delfino, I would disagree that this is a commuting case. So,
but she didn't sign in or in any way show that she was on the clock once she arrived at Echo Summit or from Echo Summit to the other location. So how was she directed by Evergreen to go to Echo Summit first? She wasn't.
I think if you look at the facts, I think she was. She was not directed at that particular time by the phone call, but through her own mind, she made the decision to check her schedule, which is reasonable to do. That is where the schedule is kept. That's where she worked the vast majority of the time. I think the evidence is she worked there 90% of the time. So at the very least, going to your principal place of business, checking your schedule, and then departing raises a fact question. So you ask about control or direction at the actual time. I'd refer the court to the ESIS case that we've cited in our brief. It's actually from this court. And as it relates to control at the actual time, in that particular case, we had a Tarrant County deputy, who was off duty. He was at home cleaning his firearm. He was not being paid at the time. He was not working at the time. He was doing something basically that would assist him in his duties later down the line. This court found that that was course and scope of employment.
Well, actually, law enforcement is always on duty. I think that was determined in some insurance cases, that they're always on duty. So do you have anybody besides law enforcement to show that it would be course and scope?
Well, what
similar circumstances?
What I do have, if you look at the language in that case, and I think it is instructive, it says course and scope is not limited to the exact time when the employee reports to work, the moment when the employee's labors are completed, nor the place where the work is done. So that is the language I think that's instructive in this particular instance. So I think what we have is a factual context to the likes that really has not been discussed in any of the opinions that I can find. And in light of that factual context, I think clearly it raises a fact issue.
When Ms. Wilson testified that she was not working when she went to Echo Summit, and quote, "I just went for myself to get information," tell me what summary judgment evidence you have that raises a fact issue in light of that rather conclusive summary judgment evidence.
Well, I think on the way to Echo Summit, she clearly was not working. But my position is, the appellant's position is, once she went to Echo Summit and receives that directive, and it was an express directive, not an implied directive, because she gets on the calendaring system there at Echo Summit, that is when, in fact, she starts doing something in furtherance of the employer. And it's at that point, that very point, when she receives that directive, then hops in her car in furtherance of her work, that's when she begins course and scope.
But couldn't she have just called?
She could have. She could have called. She elected not to do that. And I think that's the factual distinction in this case. There's literally no case, Justice Walker, that I can find where if someone shows up at their principal place of business and then departs, that's not course and scope. I've cited the court to the Just Breaks case. It's a case where an employee of basically an oil changing company or a brake company shows up for work. He's then asked to pick up breakfast. Has nothing to do really with furthering the nature of the business. The court in that case found that leaving for breakfast places that individual in the course and scope. The short answer is yes, she could have called.
But I guess my point is that the directive was to go to the Endicott house, not to report to the principal place. And so and she could have found out where she needed to go by calling. So I'm having a difficult time to see course and scope because she chose to go check the schedule and then report to where she was supposed to be to start her shift.
Well, I just don't think that would be any different than an employee not remembering where he or she were supposed to be. And, you know, I go back to the analogy with my legal assistant. Mm-hmm. You know, over the weekend, she comes, you know, she ends up coming to the office to make the determination of what her duties are. And once again, I'm just going back to that factual distinction. I think it's critical in this case. And, you know, the bottom line is it's a close case, no doubt about it. It's a close call. It's a close case. Summary judgments, the facts should be construed, frankly, in the non-movement's favor, which is the appellants in this case. Bottom line is, with the evidence, with her reporting to her principal place of business, at the very least, with the death of a young man, a jury should be able to decide that issue.
I think the only exception to course and scope is a special mission, but you're not really, really relying on that, are you?
Well, I think this could be a special mission. You know, she's following a directive from her employer.
But the directive was to go to Endicott House, not go to Echo Summit. They had that phone conversation when she didn't show up for work like she was supposed to the morning, and she was told to go to Endicott House.
Well, I think I would argue there's really two express directives. She did get the phone call. She obviously didn't understand the nature of it. So she did what any prudent employee would do, I think, which is go check the schedule. So there's really, in my opinion, from the appellant's standpoint, two directives. The express telephone call, obviously a lack of communication, then the directive from the calendar. And to me and the appellants, that raises at least a scintilla of evidence that she was in course and scope.
Is there any evidence that there was a procedure in place that if employees had any questions about where they were supposed to report, they were to go look at the calendar? Any record, any evidence of anything like that?
I'm not aware of a procedure in place when you don't know where you're supposed to go, what you're supposed to do. Logic would tell you it makes sense to check the schedule at the principal place of business, which is what she did in this particular case. So, speaking as to special mission, Justice Gabriel, I would refer you to the Chevron case, which in that particular case, the employee was not traveling from his home to his normal place of business, nor was he traveling for his own purpose. While the mode of travel was not dictated by Chevron, the requirement that he travel was. And that's exactly what we have in this particular case. The mode of travel was not dictated, but the fact that she needed to go to that location was. In the Chevron case, even though they found course and scope and a special mission, we had a Chevron employee leave his home and go to a seminar, which once again, the distinguishing factor in our particular case is we don't have an employee that leaves her home and goes to the temporary location. We have an employee that leaves her home, maybe misguided, but the fact is she goes to her principal place of business and receives this directive. That concludes my argument. I obviously am open to answer any questions that you all might have. Pleasure to be
Thank
before you.
May it please the court, my name is Jas Bratch and I represent the Appalachian Evergreen Presbyterian Ministries in this matter. I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. This is my first appellate argument, so I hope that I don't stumble through it too uncomfortably. The court is obviously aware of all the facts and has read the briefs. I just want to touch on a couple of things. Evergreen Presbyterian Ministries, they operate 6 to 8 houses in the Tarrant County area. Ms. Wilson was a as-needed employee. She worked at the Echo Home. She also worked at the Endicott Home, and she worked at other homes as needed. While the majority of her time was spent at the Echo Home, she did work at these multiple locations.
Doesn't that support appellant's position then that there's an issue of fact as to whether, since she did work at all sorts of different locations, it was part of, there's a question about whether it was part of her employment or within the scope and course of her employment to go see where she was supposed to report in today?
I don't think so. I think there was one of the cases we cited was a gentleman who had multiple work locations, and the court in that case stated that when he was going to and from those work locations, it wasn't in the course and scope of employment. Once again, some of the facts in this case is she's part-time, she's paid hourly. She's paid once she signs in and once she leaves. She uses a code to tell which house she's at. The nature of her work, the nature of Evergreen's work, is to be a caretaker or a house mother. It's not driving. She never uses her personal vehicle in the course and scope of her work. She's not reimbursed for mileage. She's not paid for her time to and from work. As the court is well aware, an employee is not in the course and scope of his employment while driving his or her vehicle to and from the place of work. And in this case, the central issue is really the in the course and scope cases is the right to control, the right and power to direct and control in the causal act or omission at the very instance of its occurrence. That is what we need to look at, is when the instance occurred, whether or not Evergreen had any control over her. And there's no facts to suggest that Evergreen had any control over her at that time. She went to the first location to check her schedule on her own accord. No one told her to do that. I believe that's clear in the record. She was then driving to the other location. She exited to go to Albertson's to get some snacks, and was getting back on the highway. All of that was for her personal, for her own personal objectives. There was no control over her at the time that the incident occurred. She was driving her own car, doing her own things, which was getting snacks. We believe that appellant's position of the checking the schedule, I don't believe that there's any question of fact that she was in the course and scope of employment when she went to check her schedule, but I believe that based upon the case law, that application would be misapplied in any regard, because we have to look at the time and the instance and the act or omission.
So you agree that when she went to check her schedule, she was within the course and scope of her employment?
No, I do not.
Oh, I thought that's what you said.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, my thing is that we have to look at the time that the incident happened, that she was driving on her way to work.
No, my question was, when she checked on her schedule, was she in the course and scope of her employment?
No, I do not believe so. I believe that, once again, there was no control over her. She was not furthering the business of her employer at the time. That was just something that even the testimony shows that she did for her own personal reasons. There was a case, let me point to it, where an employee, he was a hotel employee, and Soto versus 717 HBE Corp. And in that case, a hotel employee accidentally took the keys of a storage unit. He knew that the hotel needed the keys and they needed to get in there. On his own accord, he decides that he needs to go back and return those keys. On his way back, he's involved in an accident. The court ruled that he was not in the course and scope of employment at the time. Basically the reasoning was that they had no control over him on the way away to that location. And another case that I would point the court to is the Wiley case that was cited in our brief as well. In this case, a gentleman worked from 7 in the morning to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and he was supposed to receive his check. The employer told him, hey, your check is not ready. Come back at 6 o'clock to pick up your paycheck. In between 3 and 6, he goes out drinking on his way back. He's involved in an accident. In that case, the court stated that it is immaterial whether the driver was instructed or required to come back to work to pick up his paycheck because the incident, which is the base of this lawsuit, occurred while Sonier was traveling to work and not while he was at work. And I think that's a distinction in this case as well. And to touch briefly on appellant's case law, he cited the Just Breaks case, and I believe that the Just Breaks case is distinguishable. In that case, the gentleman had appeared for work, he had clocked in, and was asked to go get breakfast. He was paid for that time to go get breakfast, and it was a part of, I believe the facts show that it was a part of his duties to go regularly run errands on the job. Therefore, he was already clocked in, being paid for that, compensated for that time. In this case, there's no indication that Ms. Wilson was compensated for the time that she was traveling to and from work. Appellant also brought up the special mission analogy, and we believe that that can also be distinguishable because in special mission cases, the finding is that the employer had to tell the employee how to get there and which route to take, and it was something apart from the regular job duties. In this case, there's no evidence of that. She was just going to a different location when this incident happened. She'd been to that location before and was clearly going to and from work. Therefore, we believe that this is a commuter case because at the time that the incident occurred, which is the principal time that we need to look at, she was on her way to work. Evergreen did not have control over her, did not know where she was, did not tell her how to get there, certainly did not tell her which route to take, did not provide her a car, did not reimburse her for mileage. There's no facts to suggest that she was in the course and scope of employment. We believe that the trial court was correct in finding that there was no fact issue that exists, and we ask the appellate court to affirm that decision.
Questions? Thank you.
I do want to address the deviation issue. The law essentially on deviation, I've cited Justice Gabriel, you asked a question about that. The case I've cited is Travelers versus Keys. In that particular case, we have a gentleman who was on call, but while he was on call as some type of labor, I believe plumber or something of that nature, he decided to take his wife to church. In the process of taking his wife to church, there was an accident, and someone else was killed. The court in that case found that although he was taking his wife to church, that was not a substantial deviation, and they found this gentleman to be in the course and scope of employment. The language that's instructive from that case is, quote, a small deviation during business travel, both in time and space, does not compel as a matter of law a holding that the employee was not in the course and scope. So I wanted to address that issue more clearly to answer that question. The other case that I've cited is the Gilgon case. In that particular case on deviation, there was a ranch hand who left the ranch. He left the ranch and he stopped not only at a pipe store to pick something up to use when he returned to the ranch, but he also stopped after performing those duties at a local store, convenience store, such as we have in this case. In this case, and it's a Corpus Christi case from 1994, the court held that that was course and scope. The other thing I would tell you about deviation, we have very specific jury charges that can be cured with some instruction. Certainly they would get an issue on that, whether there was a deviation. This case, Gilgon, talks about the type of instruction a court would make to have the jury look at deviation. So that obviously can be cured at trial with an instruction like that and let the court analyze whether, in fact, enough evidence exists for a cause and scope finding, course and scope finding. That's all we're asking is, in this particular case, with the death of a young man, we let a jury decide this case. I'll conclude citing you to the Arabez case. And it's a case cited in our brief, and it simply says, course and scope of employment is generally a fact issue like proximate cause and negligence. That's what we have here. Respectfully, we have a fact question that should be resolved by a jury. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your argument. We appreciate your being here today. The case is submitted. As you can see, we had lots of questions, so I'm glad you took the time to request argument.
Thank you for having us.
You're excused to go about your business, or you can stay around and hear the next case if you'd like to.
I'll watch some real lawyers here.